Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article by Asamfiri et al. Delirium Screening in Critically Ill Children, Secondary Analysis of the Multicenter PICU-UP Pilot Trial Dataset from 2019 to 2020. Objectives: to determine the patient-level factors associated with performing daily delirium screening in PICUs with established delirium screening practices. Design: a secondary analysis of 2019 to 2020 prospective data from the baseline phase of the PICU-UP pilot stepped wedge multicenter trial. Setting: 6 PICUs in the United States. Patients: 1,064 patients who were admitted to a PICU for 3 or more days. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 1,064 patients, 74%, with a 95% confidence interval of 71 to 76%, underwent delirium screening at least once during their PICU stay. On 57% of the 8,965 eligible patient days, screening was conducted. The overall prevalence of delirium was 46% across all screened days, and 64% of screened patients experienced delirium at some point during their PICU stay. Factors associated with greater adjusted odds ratio of increased daily delirium screening included PICU stay longer than 15 days compared with 1 to 3 days, invasive mechanical ventilation as opposed to room air, dexmedetomidine infusions, and propofol infusions. Adjusted odds ratio for PICU stay longer than 15 days was 3.36 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.62 to 4.3. Adjusted odds ratio for invasive mechanical ventilation was 1.67 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.32 to 2.12. Adjusted odds ratio for dexmedetomidine infusions was 1.23 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.04 to 1.44. And adjusted odds ratio for propofol infusions was 1.55 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 2.23. Conversely, decreased adjusted odds ratio of daily delirium screening was associated with female gender and the administration of continuous infusions of opioids or ketamine. Adjusted odds ratio with female gender was 0.78 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.63 to 0.96. Adjusted odds ratio of the administration of continuous infusions of opioids was 0.75 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.63 to 0.9, and the adjusted odds ratio of ketamine was 0.48 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.29 to 0.79. Conclusions: in the 2019 to 2020 PICU-UP cohort across 6 PICUs, delirium screening occurred on only 57% of days, despite the presence of established practices. Female gender, patients in the early stages of their PICU stay, and patients not receiving mechanical ventilation were associated with lower odds of daily delirium screening. Our results highlight the need for structured quality improvement processes to both standardize and increase the frequency of delirium screening. Abstract 2 is a feature article by Y et al. Evolution of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Physicians' Clinical and Academic Profile by Gender. Objectives: to examine career trajectory and academic profile of pediatric critical care medicine physicians with special focus on gender differences. Design: observational cross-sectional study of PCCM fellowship graduates using publicly available data. Setting: publicly available databases including National Provider Identifier Registry, American Board of Pediatrics, Doximity, Office Hospital Websites, and Scopus. Subjects: 2,129 PCCM fellowship graduates employed in clinical positions in U.S. practice locations. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Physician demographic characteristics included gender and time since fellowship completion. Current career and academic characteristics included employment data, publication productivity, defined as age index, and academic rank. Data from 2,129 career PCCM physicians was included, with recent graduates showing a notable increase in female representation. Workplace characteristics revealed that most PCCM physicians worked in university-affiliated hospitals, with higher percentages of female physicians working in university-affiliated hospitals compared with male physicians. The study also highlighted significant gender disparities in academic metrics, with male physicians having higher H indices, 3 versus 2, with a p-value less than 0.001, and more publications, 6 versus 4, with a p-value less than 0.001, than their female counterparts across various career phases. Additionally, the analysis showed gender differences in academic rank, with a higher proportion of female faculty holding assistant and associate professor ranks, 58.2% versus 47.5% with a p-value less than 0.001, while a greater percentage of male faculty held the rank of professor, 20.2% versus 11.1% with a p-value less than 0.001. Multiple variable regression analysis identified both male gender and time since fellowship graduation as independently associated with a physician's H index, while only time since fellowship graduation was linked to current academic rank. Conclusions. This is the first analysis of career and academic characteristics of practicing PCCM physicians, additionally studying the association of gender and career trajectory. Gender discrepancy was seen in employment hospital characteristics, H indices, and academic rank. Additional studies are required to further explore the impact of gender on career trajectory. Abstract 3 is a feature article by Lisi et al. Trajectories in Intensity of Medical Interventions at the End of Life, Clustering Analysis in a Pediatric Single-Center Retrospective Cohort from 2013 to 2021. Objective. Pediatric deaths often occur within hospitals and involve balancing aggressive treatment with minimization of suffering. This study first investigated associations between clinical and demographic features and the level of intensity of various therapies these patients undergo at the end of life. Second, the work used these data to develop a new, broader spectrum for classifying pediatric end-of-life trajectories. Design. Retrospective single-center study from 2013 to 2021. Setting. 461-bed tertiary standalone children's hospital with 112 ICU beds. Patients. Patients of age 0 to 26 years old at the time of death. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 1,111 included patients, 85.7% died in hospital. Patients who died outside the hospital were older. Among the 952 in-hospital deaths, most occurred in ICUs, or 89.5%. Clustering analysis was used to distinguish end-of-life trajectories based on the presence of intensive therapies and/or an active resuscitation attempt at the end of life. We identified 5 simplified categories. 1. Death during active resuscitation. 2. Controlled withdrawal of life-sustaining technology. 3. Natural progression to death despite maximal therapy. 4. Discontinuation of non-sustaining therapies. And 5. Withholding or non-initiation of future therapies. Patients with recent surgical procedures, a history of organ transplantation, or admission to the cardiovascular ICU had more intense therapies at end of life than those who received palliative care consultations, had known genetic conditions, or were of older age. Conclusions. In this retrospective study of pediatric end-of-life trajectories based on the intensity of technology and/or resuscitation discontinued at the end of life, we have identified associations between these trajectories and patient characteristics. Further research is needed to investigate the impact of these trajectories on families, patients, and healthcare providers. Abstract 4 is a feature article by Jones et al. Ethnicity and Observed Oxygen Saturations, Fraction of Inspired Oxygen, and Clinical Outcomes, a post-hoc analysis of the OxyPICU trial of conservative oxygenation. Objectives. A conservative oxygenation strategy targeting peripheral oxygen saturations, or SpO2, between 88% and 92% in mechanically ventilated children in PICU was associated with a shorter duration of organ support and greater survival compared with SpO2 greater than 94% in our recent OxyPICU trial. SpO2 monitors may overestimate arterial oxygen saturations in patients with higher levels of skin pigmentation compared with those with less skin pigmentation. We investigated if ethnicity was associated with changes in distributions of SpO2 and FiO2 and outcome. Design. Post-hoc analysis of a pragmatic, open-label, multi-center randomized controlled trial. Setting. 15 PICUs across the United Kingdom and Scotland. Patients. Children aged 38 weeks corrected gestational age to 15 years accepted to a participating PICU as an unplanned admission and receiving invasive mechanical ventilation with supplemental oxygen for abnormal gas exchange. Methods: hierarchical regression models for SpO2 and FiO2, and ordinal models for the primary trial outcome of a composite of the duration of organ support at 30 days and death were used to examine the effects of ethnicity, accounting for baseline SpO2, FiO2, and mean airway pressure and trial allocation. Measurements and main results. Ethnicity data were available for 1,577 of 1,986 eligible children, 1,408 or 89.3% of which were white, Asian, or black. SpO2 and FiO2 distributions did not vary according to black or Asian ethnicity compared with white children. The trial primary outcome measure also did not vary significantly with ethnicity. The point estimate for the treatment effect of conservative oxygenation in black children was 0.64 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.33 to 1.25 compared with 0.84 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.68 to 1.04 in the overall trial population. Conclusions: these data do not suggest that the association between improved outcomes and conservative oxygenation strategy in mechanically ventilated children in PICU is modified by ethnicity. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Singer Harrell et al. Aerosol box use in reducing healthcare worker contamination during airway procedures or the airway study, secondary workload and provider outcomes in a simulation-based trial. Objectives: an aerosol box aims to reduce the risk of healthcare provider exposure to infections during aerosol-generating medical procedures, but little is known about its impact on workload of team members. We conducted a secondary analysis of data from a prospective, multi-center randomized control trial evaluating the impact of aerosol box use on patterns of healthcare provider contamination during aerosol-generating medical procedures. The objectives of this study are to 1. Evaluate the effect of aerosol box use on healthcare provider workload, 2. Identify factors associated with healthcare provider workload when using an aerosol box, and 3. Describe the challenges perceived by healthcare providers of aerosol box use. Design: simulation-based randomized trial conducted from May to December 2021. Setting: 4 pediatric simulation centers. Subjects: teams of 2 healthcare providers were randomly assigned to control, no aerosol box, or intervention groups, aerosol box. Interventions: each team performed 3 scenarios requiring different pediatric airway management, including bag valve mask ventilation, laryngeal mask airway insertion, and endotracheal intubation with video laryngoscopy on a simulated COVID-19 patient. National Aeronautics and Space Administration Task Load Index, or NASA TLX, is a standard tool that measures subjective workload with 6 subscales. Measurements and main results: a total of 64 teams, or 128 participants, were recruited. The use of aerosol box was associated with significantly higher frustration during laryngeal mask airway insertion, 28.71 versus 17.42, with a mean difference of 11.29, a 95% confidence interval of 0.92 to 21.66, and a p-value equal to 0.33. For endotracheal intubation, there was a significant increase in most subscales in the intervention group, but there was no significant difference for bag valve mask. Average NASA TLX scores were all in the low range for both groups. Range included the control bag valve mask of 23.06 with a standard deviation of 13.91 to intervention of endotracheal tube intubation 38.15 with a standard deviation of 20.45. The effect of provider role on workloads was statistically significant only for physical demand with a p-value equal to 0.001. As the complexity of procedure increased, bag valve mask to laryngeal mask airway to endotracheal tube intubation, the workload increased in all 6 subscales with a p-value less than 0.05. Conclusions: the use of aerosol box increased workload during endotracheal tube intubation, but not with bag valve mask or laryngeal mask airway insertion. Overall workload scores remained in the low range, and there was no significant difference between airway provider and assistant. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation by Eimer et al. Optimal chest compression point during pediatric resuscitation. Implications for pediatric resuscitation practice by CT scans. Objectives: Current European guidelines for pediatric cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, recommend the lower half of the sternum as the chest compression point. In this study, we have used thoracic CT scans to evaluate recommended and optimal compression point in relation to cardiac anatomy and structure. Design: analysis of routinely acquired thoracic CT scans acquired from 2000 to 2020. Setting: single-center pediatric department in a German university hospital. Patients: imaging data were obtained from 290 patients of 3 to 16 years old. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: we measured and analyzed 14 thoracic metrics in each thoracic CT scan. In 44 of 290, or 15.2% of scans, the recommended compression point did not match the level of the cardiac ventricles. Anatomically, the optimal compression point was one rib or one vertebral body lower than the recommended compression point. That is, the optimal compression point was more caudal to the level of the body of the sternum in 67 of 290, or 23.1% of scans. The recommended compression depth appeared reasonable in children younger than 12 years old. At 12 years old or older, the maximum compression depth of 6 centimeters is less than or equal to one-third of the thoracic depth. Conclusions: in this study of thoracic CT scans in children 3 to 16 years old, we have found that optimal compression point for CPR appears to be more caudal than the recommended compression point. Therefore, it seems reasonable to prefer to use the lower part of the sternum for CPR chest compressions. At 12 years old or older, a compression depth similar to that used in adults, 6 centimeter limit, may be chosen. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation by Botari et al. Pancreatic stone protein in the diagnosis of sepsis in children admitted to high dependency care, a single center prospective cohort study. Objectives: blood level of pancreatic stone protein, or PSP, is a promising biomarker of sepsis both in adults and children. The aim of our study was to investigate the diagnostic accuracy of PSP in children with suspected sepsis and to compare diagnostic performance with other sepsis biomarkers approved for clinical use, that is, procalcitonin, or PCT, and C-reactive protein, or CRP. Design: prospective study. Setting: PICU and pediatric emergency department. Intervention: blood levels of PSP were measured using a nanofluidic point-of-care immunoassay within 24 hours of admission. Measurements and main results: we studied 99 children aged between older than 1 month and younger than 18 years with signs and symptoms of systemic inflammatory response syndrome, irrespective of associated organ dysfunction. The prevalence of sepsis was 35 of 99, or 35.4%. Patients with sepsis had higher PSP levels than patients with systemic inflammation of non-infectious cause, with a p-value less than 0.001. In this analysis, the optimal cutoff for the diagnosis of sepsis using PSP was 123 nanograms per milliliter, which resulted in a sensitivity of 0.63 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.43 to 0.8 and a specificity of 0.89 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.77 to 0.95. The PSP test area under the receiver operating characteristic curve was 0.82 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.73 to 0.91, and by comparison, procalcitonin and CRP area under the receiver operating characteristic curve were 0.7 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.58 to 0.82 and 0.72 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.6 to 0.84, respectively. Overall, the pre-test to post-test probability of sepsis with a positive test changed from 0.35 to 0.73. Conclusions: in this single-center prospective pediatric cohort admitted to the high-intensive care and to the PICU, our findings suggested the potential use of PSP as a sepsis biomarker. However, because of the clinical diagnostic uncertainty with a positive result, further investigation is needed, particularly in combination with other biomarkers. Abstract 8 is a brief report by Saju et al. Feasibility and acceptability of mobile phone-based surveys to identify mental health symptoms in parents and guardians of PICU patients. Objective: parents experience psychological distress during their children's admission to a PICU, but effective screening for parental mental health symptoms is not the standard of care. We aim to test the feasibility and acceptability of a mobile phone-based mental health survey for parents and guardians of PICU patients to facilitate their support by the PICU team. Design: post-hoc analysis of a single-institution pilot study conducted in 2022. Mental health surveys were delivered by text message to parents and guardians of PICU patients over 1 month, beginning 3 days after their child's PICU admission. In-person interviews 1 month after hospital discharge were used to solicit participants' opinions on the survey platform and content. Setting: a quaternary U.S. academic medical center. Participants: parents and guardians of PICU patients. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of the 53 participants who consented, 31 or 58% completed the study. Symptoms of acute stress were the most common and most severe. 21 participants screened positive for acute stress, and 20 of those that screened positive had moderate or severe symptoms. Among the 23 participants who screened positive for one mental health condition, 10 met the thresholds for all three. Scoring of the protocol's usability, acceptability, and feasibility showed a system usability scale equal to 82 of 100, an acceptability of intervention measure score equal to 4.2 of 5, an intervention appropriateness measure score equal to 4.5 of 5, and feasibility of intervention measure score equal to 4.5 of 5. Conclusions and relevance. Mobile phone-based screening for parental mental health symptoms is acceptable and may offer the advantage of privacy and flexibility. Abstract 9 is a brief report by Asp et al. Parent perspectives on social risk screening in the PICU. Objective: health inequities are widespread and associated with avoidable poor health outcomes. In the PICU, we are increasingly understanding how health inequities relate to critical illness and health outcomes. Experts recommend assessing for health inequities by screening for social determinants of health and adverse childhood experiences. However, guidance on screening is limited, and screening has not been universally implemented. Design: we conducted a qualitative study using semi-structured interviews with a convenient sample of 11 PICU parents between November 2021 and January 2022. Setting: urban, quaternary, freestanding children's hospital. Subjects: parents of children with a PICU hospitalization between November 2020 and October 2021. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Domains of interest included experience with and attitudes towards social determinants of health and adverse childhood experience screening, perspectives on addressing needs with and without resources and their relationship to health, and recommendations for screening. Interviews were transcribed verbatim and coded with an inductive approach using thematic analysis and constant comparative methods. Anne and Robert H. Lurie Children's Institutional Review Board approved this study. 10 participants found social determinants of health and adverse childhood experience screening to be acceptable and valuable in the PICU, even for topics without a readily available resource. Participants did not have broad experience with adverse childhood experience screening, though all believed this provided the medical team with valuable context regarding their child. 10 participants recommended screening occur after their child has been stabilized and that they are notified that screening is universal. In conclusion, participants found screening for social determinants of health and adverse childhood experiences to be acceptable and valuable in the PICU. Families have important insight that should be leveraged to improve the support of unmet needs through the development of strengths-based, parent-informed screening initiatives. Abstract 10 is an online clinical investigation by Hennigan et al. New morbidities during critical illness and associated risk of ICU readmission. Virtual Pediatric Systems Cohort from 2017 to 2020. Objectives: to describe change in Functional Status Scale, or FSS, associated with critical illness and assess associated development of new morbidities with PICU readmission. Design: retrospective cross-sectional cohort using the Virtual Pediatric Systems Database, or VPS. Setting: 126 U.S. PICUs participating in VPS. Subjects: children younger than 21 years old admitted 2017 to 2020 and followed to December 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Among 40,654 patients, 86.2% were classified as having good function or mild dysfunction before illness. Most patients did not have a change in their functional status scale category during hospitalization. Survival with new morbidity occurred most in children with baseline good or mild dysfunction, 8.7%. Hospital mortality increased across categories of baseline dysfunction. Of 39,701 survivors, 14.2% were readmitted within 1 year. Median time to readmission was 159 days. In multivariable mixed effects Cox modeling, time to readmission was most associated with discharge functional status, with a hazard ratio of 5.3 and a 95% confidence interval of 4.6 to 6.1 for those with very severe dysfunction, and associated with a lower hazard in those who survived with new morbidity, with a hazard ratio of 0.7 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.6 to 0.7. Conclusions. Development of new morbidities occurs commonly in pediatric critical illness, but we fail to find an association with greater hazard of PICU readmission. Instead, patient functional status is associated with hazard of PICU readmission. Abstract 11 is an online clinical investigation by Spirato et al. Extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation use among children with cardiac disease in the ICU, a meta-analysis and meta-regression of data through March 2024. Objective: epidemiologic data on extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or ECPR, use in children with cardiac disease after in-hospital cardiac arrest are lacking. We aim to investigate trends in ECPR use over time in critically ill children with cardiac disease. Data sources: we performed a secondary analysis of a recent systematic review to investigate trends in ECPR use in children with cardiac disease. PubMed, Web of Science, Embase, and Cumulative Index to Nursing and Allied Health Literature were screened, inception to September 2021. For completeness of the secondary analysis, PubMed was also re-screened from September 2021 to March 2024. Study selection: observational studies using epidemiologic data on ECPR use in children with cardiac disease admitted to an ICU. Data extraction: data were extracted by two independent investigators. The risk of bias was assessed using the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute's quality assessment tools. Random effects meta-analysis was used to compute a pooled portion of subjects undergoing ECPR. Meta-regression was used to assess trends in ECPR use over time. Data synthesis: of the 2,664 studies identified, 9, including 17,669 patients, included data on ECPR use in children with cardiac disease. 8 were cohort studies, 1 was a case control, 8 were retrospective, 1 was prospective, 6 were single center, and 3 were multicenter. 7 studies were included in the meta-analysis. All were judged of good quality. By meta-analysis, we found that a pooled proportion of 21% with a 95% confidence interval of 15 to 29% of pediatric patients with cardiac disease experiencing in-hospital cardiac arrest were supported with ECPR. By meta-regression adjusted for category of patients, surgical versus general cardiac, we found that the use of ECPR in critically ill children with cardiac disease significantly increased over time, with a p-value equal to 0.026. Conclusions: about one-fifth of critically ill pediatric cardiac patients experiencing in-hospital cardiac arrest were supported with ECPR, and its use significantly increased over time. This may partially explain the increased trends in survival demonstrated for this population. The PCCM narrative this month is entitled "To the Parents of the Boy We Lost" by Dr. Stephanie Gauget. Abstract: recently, we took care of a teenage boy in our PICU who had been struggling with a lifelong chronic illness and accompanied him and his parents during the last few days of his life. We had the privilege of getting to know him and his parents quite well during the last few years, as he required hospitalization several times during this time. We saw how extremely dedicated his parents had been to him and his care, how they left no stone unturned and sacrificed everything they could to help him have the best quality of life possible. I happened to not be on service nor know about the moment when he passed away. I also missed when his funeral took place. I wanted to reach out to his parents to express how much his life and their love for him had meant to me too, and to find some closure. So I wrote this short poem for them and for all the other parents who have to go through the most difficult time a parent can ever go through. As a pediatric intensivist, a mom who has never been where they had to go, a fellow human being, and a grieving friend. We see how it was so very hard for you to let him go. We saw how hard you worked for him to have his best life possible, how you wanted him so much to be healthy and whole, to be safe and free from pain and fear, had so many dreams for him, for smiles and hugs and stories to yet unfold, to be there side by side, for his brother, for you, even for us. We see your grief, your loss, your pain. We tried so hard to fight with you to save him, heal him, to just be here, to let him experience joy, comfort, and love, even if just a little more. We tried it all alongside you, brokenhearted, parted from the life we can no longer hold, nor protect, nor heal. He will always be part of you and of us too. We will never forget. We will always remember him, his brother, you, your whole family. Let us be filled with hope that you may heal as we will, that he can never suffer any more harm, that he is whole now and free, loved and blessed, as are you. This concludes the abstracts for the October 2024 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.